Welcome to the PC Gamer Podcast. This is episode number 105 for October 25th.
Modshop.net, the new website from the editors of our sister magazine, Maximum PC. Modshop is the ultimate community resource for PC modders of all experience levels, and home to our monthly hardware deathmatch, where you can pit your best rig against all comers in a gladiator-style battle to win your share of the $2,000 monthly prize pool. Folks who have never picked up a Dremel can check out the amazing work and help to determine the winner of the monthly contest by voting in battles. Check out www.modshop.net today.
Yes, yes, welcome one and all to another super soar-away sensational PC Gamer podcast. I am your host, former editor-in-chief and current Backspace columnist Gary Witter. Joining us today, current editor-in-chief, it still doesn't feel quite right to say that, but yet strangely good, Kristen Salvatore. Hello, Kristen.
Hello, Gary.
I want to clarify that. Doesn't sound right, it's not that the idea of you being the editor-in-chief doesn't sound right to me, because it sounds very right.
It's like you're still ready.
It's going to take a little while to get, you know, it's going to take a little while to get used to. You've broken down so many, so many gender, social, political barriers.
You know, you'd think that. It's funny. I was telling these guys, I walked into the office on Monday, and you know, the first issue of the magazine in which I'm appear as the editor-in-chief is out. And so I've started to get a bunch of different emails from different folks with different reactions to my EdNote and the fact that I'm the EIC. And I'd say like 75% to 80% of them have been just really nice and very supportive. And there are some that are really kind of skating the edge.
Well, like what? Really, people that aren't ready for you for a female editor?
There's been a couple that have been like, oh, it's a chick running the magazine.
They're deeply concerned about cooties.
That's right. There's one, somebody asked if I got the job because of my cute little feet. That was sort of weird. There was one in particular that's hilarious, but that I can't mention on the podcast.
That's a bit sad, isn't it, that kind of reaction still exists in this day and age?
I thought it was kind of funny, but it's not like it was unexpected. But
well, for those people, if any of them are listening, you'll be glad to hear that the rest of the podcast this week is, as always, a testosterone-fueled parade of manliness, headed up, as always, by me, and then bringing up the rear, Dan Stapleton,
hey.
And Senior Associate Editor, Senior Executive Editor, Chuck Osborne, and our producer out of Chicago, Jeremy Williams.
Hey, hey.
Who may not sound manly. He doesn't have the manliest
what?
Radio voice.
Gary,
I can assure you.
You're making a lot of friends, man.
He's all man.
Listen,
he's a man's
if anybody
man.
Would know, Gary would know.
That's right.
Jeremy is all man.
All right, let's get right into it. What's happening in the world of PC gaming news this week? MMOs.
Well, we should say that Logan and Norm are not here because they're at the NVIDIA announcement, where I guess they've.
Do you want to host, Dan?
I'm just explaining why they're not here.
You were given the chance to host. And you didn't want to do it.
I spat in that chance.
If you now want to do it, as you seem to, I'll happily hand
boys,
over to you.
Boys.
Yeah,
we're
gonna have to.
Do you like one of those people like when you go buy some chips and you say like, do you want to get some chips? Oh, no, I don't really want any chips. And then you just get chips for yourself, and then that person then eats half your chips.
Eats them all? Yeah.
Like, I didn't want my own chips. I just wanted some of yours.
Pretty much, yeah.
Well, I'm not standing for it. MMOs are in the news this week. Bethesda has announced this week that they have just landed a huge chunk of money. How much money are we talking about? It's $300 million has been invested in Bethesda's parent company, ZeniMax Media, which will be used at least in part for the financing of upcoming MMOs. Bethesda, obviously, a company that knows a lot about role-playing games, thanks to the Elder Scrolls series and the upcoming Fallout 3. They've yet to make an MMO, but this obviously is now the hot new property that a lot of investors and developers are chasing. And you know, obviously after the huge success of World of Warcraft, everybody wants to get in on that action and make an MMO. Dan, do we know anything about what they're going to be using this money for specifically? Like, what kind of MMO will they do? Will they take one of their existing IPs?
Will we see an
Elder Scrolls MMO, or what are they going to do?
We know what they're not doing. They can't do a Fallout MMO, because as part of their agreement with Interplay, it was a really convoluted thing where they, they initially licensed the rights to do Fallout 3 from Interplay. Then they bought the rights to the Fallout franchise, but then licensed back to Interplay the Fallout MMO rights, because Interplay allegedly has this thing in the works. But if you go to Interplay's website, you know, it looks like something from 1991.
Yeah, so, I thought there was like only one guy left in the office.
Yeah, apparently he has big plans for Fallout MMO.
The Interplay, it's kind of sad. Interplay used to be such a huge name back in the 80s and the early 90s. And you go there now, and you're right, it is kind of like that Dunder Mifflin website, you know, coming 2005.
Yeah. Yeah, so, I don't know, I guess I wouldn't rule it out that, you know, eventually, that maybe they'll just, you know, buy it back from Interplay and make a Fallout MMO, which would be awesome. But,
the most likely candidate would seem to be an Elder Scrolls branded.
I've long thought it would have to be an Elder Scrolls brand, because I mean, you know, medieval fantasy, that's the sort of MMO that is usually successful. And that's one of the biggest PC franchises there is.
Yeah, I've spoken to Bill Roper about this on a number of occasions about the MMO space, and obviously he's making his own play into the MMO space with Hellgate London, and that's got its own take on the genre.
Sort of, right.
But he said he's always said to me, you know, if you're going to break into this space, the last thing you should do is a sword and sorcery MMO, because why play, you know, World of Warcraft is such a behemoth. Why play directly into their hands? You've got to try and do something different rather than go directly up against those guys.
Right. Except,
well, yeah, except that everybody who does something different, they usually go down in flames.
Right, but I think that the big difference here is that the Elder Scrolls is a very well established IP. They've got their own fan base, just like Warcraft did before they went into the MMO space. So they've got a much better chance than you know, like all the people that are just starting up with new IPs out of nowhere and expecting
that seems to be the other way to do it. World of Warcraft.
That's the case.
Sorry, with Blizzard, Gary. They obviously were came into World of Warcraft with a huge, you know, pre-existing Warcraft fan base.
And universe.
Lord of the Rings Online has that.
And Lord of the Rings Online seems to be having success. Obviously, there's a huge fan base there. We're just seeing, I guess, Conan is about to come out, and that's got its big. Obviously, everyone knows who Conan the Barbarian is, and that's all good.
When you say about to come out, that's going to be March. So that was pushed back.
There's a Warhammer MMO.
Right,
Warhammer.
Leveraging those pre-existing audiences seems to be the way, and certainly in the world of single-player role-playing games, the Elder Scrolls franchise is probably the biggest one out there, I would think.
Right.
I sort of hope that they're, but you know, like, because they're such a great developer with such a great pedigree, not only for existing IP, I just feel like I like everything they do so much, it would be really cool, I'd love it if they did try something new. Like that would, you know, something, a new MMO coming from a company like that would be something that I'd be really willing to put some time into checking out.
Right. I mean, I'm really hoping that eventually they'll get to do Fallout, because what I've seen of Fallout 3 so far has been, you know, they've really got the atmosphere down, and to be able to, you know, do an MMO in that universe would be fantastic, and it would be radically different from Sword and Sorcery, just because, you know, it's the post-apocalyptic thing, but, you know, it's got a whole, you know, new frontier feel to it, and a very lived-in world, so I think that would be fantastic.
The other big...
Well, if you think it'd be fantastic, Dan.
then it must be all right.
Yeah.
It'll pass muster. The other big news that's got everyone in the MMO world a chittering and a chattering this week is the news, well, not so much the news, but at least the rumor that BioWare, the other 800-pound gorilla in the RPG world these days, may be also entering into the MMO space with a game set in the Star Wars Knights of the Old Republic universe. Now, we've known for some time that BioWare is developing an MMO. That's not much of a secret, but everyone's been secretly hoping that it would be set in the Star Wars world, or the, you know, the Knights of the Old Republic universe that they helped create. And now sources close to BioWare are telling various online gossip sites that this is in fact the case. So there's been no confirmation, but it's certainly one of those things that we all so desperately want to believe. The idea of a BioWare MMO is just too good to not want.
Mm-hmm. And the Old Republic universe is, you know, it's so far separated, kind of it's parallel to the original, you know, Star Wars universe, in that all the technology is pretty much the same, all the races are the same, but it's not really, it's not constrained by George Lucas's, urinating upon the prequel movies.
That's right. So, and, one of the big problems that they had with Galaxies is that it was set at a time in the Star Wars universe. It was familiar to everyone because it was set right in the middle of the movies, but also a time when the Jedi were basically pretty much extinct. And so
right,
to become a Jedi, which
no
was
sense.
The big appeal, it was a tremendously rare thing to do. And a big part of what you expected to be able to do in the Star Wars universe, one of the most appealing ideas, you never could really explore. But in the Knights of the Old Republic universe, when the Jedi, they're all over the place. They're running around like crazy. Maybe
Jedi
there's a possibility there. Yeah, and I mean, and obviously you can even imagine, kind of Horde Alliance, Jedi, Sith, type, faction-based gameplay. So a lot more potential by setting it, in that time frame.
Well, my guess is that it's going to be like a console-friendly, gamepad-oriented MMO.
Yeah, both of the KOTOR games were console-lead. So we'll probably be seeing it on PC after it hits consoles, but as long as BioWare gives it the same control treatment they gave a similar control treatment to what they gave the KOTOR 1 and 2, then it'll translate over to PC very well.
Yeah, that's a good point. It probably will be a console lead. I wonder if they would dare do a single universe for all SKUs. You could have the 360 and the, because if it was that kind of turn based. If it was the kind of combat that we saw in KOTOR, we're not going to have the same kind of mouse versus joypad arguments, because it would be just more about, the player and the character than it would be about the control mechanism.
Right. So we just have the advantage of being able to access our inventories easier, which I'm all for. But the question has come up, what about the fact that EA now owns BioWare, and this would have to be a Lucas published game. Our theory is that it would have to have been written into the agreement, because if this game is in development, then it would have been in development for quite some time already, under a pre-existing agreement with LucasArts. So that wouldn't have been scrapped just because the studio was sold to EA.
And I guess the other question that it brings up is what does this mean for Galaxies? Would this new game exist alongside Galaxies, or would it be the death of Galaxies?
Galaxies has been the death of Galaxies for quite some time. Right?
Yeah, and,
wait,
and if it is the death
around?
Of Galaxies, would anybody notice?
I was actually surprised when I got a press release a few weeks ago that The Matrix Online is still around. I'd completely forgotten about it.
Oh yeah,
I get that exact same thing, Chuck. Every couple of months, you get an email about something happening in a particular online game. And my reaction is my first reaction is always, oh, I didn't know that was still going. It's kind of sad.
It's really hard to kill an MMO. The fact that Star Wars, the Galaxies is still going is really a testament to how difficult it is to actually kill one of these things off.
But there's got to be overhead to run them, and, how are they?
They must be making more money than it costs to run them now. There must be just enough subscribers to keep it alive.
I don't think that it costs them a whole lot to just run a couple servers. So as long as they're, if there aren't that many people playing, then they don't have to maintain many servers. They don't have
to. So I wonder what the absolute, lowest, what's the magic number at which you've just tipped, 10 people? Like, how many?
Well, no.
How many?
Maybe more than that.
I guess it depends on how cheaply you can continue to maintain it. But there's got to be some kind of magic number ratio. But you guys are right. It is difficult to kill an AI. There's only a couple that have actually really, the Asheron's called two, I guess, died. And
no, there's been more than that. Auto Assault. Lawyer City Online, Earth and Beyond.
But there's also plenty more that you think should be dead by now, but they're not like Galaxies.
Like World War II Online. That's
yeah.
still going. That's
Matrix
still going.
Online's a perfect one.
Is it possible that things like Matrix Online, that people just never canceled their, there's nobody actually there, it's just that people never canceled their subscriptions, it's just like hitting their credit cards?
There was a story in the news just recently about, Vanguard. It was, I think Sony had made another move where they had basically now fully kind of assimilated the development
Sigil.
Studio into Sony and laid more people off, and had to issue yet another press release on the lines of Sony continues to be loyal to Vanguard, and we're committed to the user base. And it's like it still sounds fairly sad, servers merging and It's then this kind of, again brings me back to the Bethesda story. If I had $300 million to invest as a venture capitalist, a new MMO venture would probably be the last thing I'd want to get involved in, because it just seems like a license to print to burn money.
Well, they just don't seem to understand because there's so many of these MMOs in development. So the market is so saturated because all these people have seen, look at World of Warcraft. We can make a boatload of money off this, but they don't realize that Warcraft is really kind of a unique phenomenon. So,
look at what World of Warcraft is doing, but that game doesn't exist in a vacuum. It exists in the same world that your game's trying to exist in. And it's eating up all the players. You know, the number of kind of single, you know, if you think about it as kind of married players and single players, a lot of players are already married to games. Most of them are married to World of Warcraft. There aren't, there's not a lot of fish in the sea to come swim in your bowl.
Right.
this analogy is going south quickly.
Well, that's what just happened with Gods and Heroes, because it just got canned. And I think the developers, and the publisher, Sony, went back, took a long, hard look at the product and just said, I don't think that we're going to be able to draw enough subscribers away from WoW and away from these other guys to make it worthwhile to go on.
If there is a smart play, it seems, again, it's the Warcraft model. It's take an existing game universe that's already got a loyal following and convert it over, which is why the BioWare Knights of the Old Republic idea seems so smart. And it does make you think, what are the other big franchises out there that are kind of begging to be made into MMOs? I've always wanted to see the GTA MMO, frankly. I've always thought that's something that's kind of rife with potential and would be quite different in the MMO space.
Although, character development in GTA, what would that be like? I mean,
you can work your way up the criminal, hierarchy. You could start as kind of a small-time drug pusher or a pimp or whatever, and be the crime boss.
Yeah.
Or you could be a crooked cop.
Yeah.
I don't know. If I knew the answers to these things, I'd be earning a lot more money and working at Rockstar or BioWare.
I'd carry the Veed torch and just say anything sci-fi for me. Whether it's StarCraft or anything else, as long as it's science fiction, that's probably what it's going to take to get me to sign up for an MMO again.
Are you going to be all about Tabula Rasa?
Whoa. What?
Hello.
We both said the same thing.
What about Tabula Rasa?
I'm not that excited about that one, but maybe I have to see more previews.
Well, Perpetual, the studio that was working on Gods and Heroes, is now devoting all their resources to Star Trek Online. So maybe that'll do it. I don't know. I haven't seen enough on that one to really make a call one way or the other if I'm excited about it or not.
Yeah. In terms of the fish analogy again, I mean, have you guys noticed that for a long time we saw Blizzard press releases like every other month saying they got another 1 million players, and we haven't seen that in a long time?
They're too busy. A, they're too busy printing their money.
I wonder,
B,
though.
They're too busy. You know, they've got two major things in the works for this year. They've got the expansion to WoW, and they've got StarCraft II.
Too busy to send out a press release? I mean, I would think
who? Like, who cares anymore? What are they going to say, we own the world?
But last we heard, they had 9 million players, and I'm thinking if they were to hit that 10, they'd certainly let us know. And so if they have...
I mean, it's not constantly growing. I mean, it can't. So it's probably hit a wall.
Well, until it hits 6 billion
players registered at birth.
EA used to send out the same press releases about Sims players. We haven't gotten one of those for quite a while.
Yeah,
it's going to plateau at some point. But I mean, you've only got to look at the fact that Burning Crusade is still number two in the top selling PC games right now after Orange Box.
Those things never go off the top 10 list ever.
It's just crazy. Let's move on. There's a story here that I guess it crops up on Dig, and it can be tracked all the way back to, I guess the original source was OXM UK reviewed Call of Duty 4 in their December issue. And before we go any further, it should be stated that the Xbox version and the PC version of the game that we'll be talking about here are basically the same thing in terms of the actual, the gameplay and the game design. Reviewed the game in their December issue and noted that the single player version of the game, the main single player campaign, only lasts about 5 to 6 hours on normal difficulty. And this has got a lot of people talking about whether or not this is a major problem, and really seems to be the latest example of a popular discussion right now in gaming about the length of games and whether or not a really good quality short game is more desirable or less desirable than a much longer game that maybe has a bit more filler in it. Chuck, what do you think?
Well, I should say that I went over and I checked with our own OXM, OXM US, and
or the good OXM.
Yeah, the good
OXM. The real OXM.
OXM. And they said that that was awfully low, that in their own experience that it was about 8 to 10 hours.
Doesn't that just mean that they're shitter at playing games?
Well, either that or maybe OXM UK, they just skip past a lot of stuff. I don't know, but I would find it hard to believe that it's only 4 to 6 hours long. Yeah, that's really, really, really short.
I guess Ryan McCaffrey is the guy that played through it, and he's a pretty damn good Halo player, so I'd be surprised if he was really dragging his feet.
Yeah, and he said it took him 10 hours to get through it.
The thing that makes me want to think, well, maybe this is true, is that games do seem to be getting shorter, don't they?
Well, for shooters, I mean, yeah, they have gotten a lot shorter. However, you know, sometimes we'll get letters from people and they'll be saying, so I remember in the good old days, I would play a shooter for 40 hours. No, you didn't. There were no single-player shooter campaigns that lasted you 40 hours. You're thinking of an RPG. And you know, if you went back and you played Wolfenstein 3D, it was the same frickin' hallway over and over again. Nowadays, you know, you have a lot more art assets. The design is a lot more intricate. It has to be shorter if you want it to, you know, look as great as games can look these days.
I think it has a lot to do with people getting feedback about how many people actually finish these games. You make a 20-hour shooter, and the number of people that finish it is going to diminish significantly. So they don't even see the ending of the game they worked hard on. And you know, a lot of it is just kind of drawn out, same stuff. Crisis, I guess that probably took me probably around 15 hours finish on hard. But every level of that game was really fantastic. So a lot of work went into each of those levels, and I've actually been going back to replay some of it. So
yeah, that's really actually one of those. I'm sorry. Ahead, I was just going to say that's actually one of those shooters that you can go back and you can replay just because the level design is so magnificent. There's so much detail everywhere that you can go back and replay it and see stuff that you just didn't see before because it's not so tightly linear.
Besides which, you can use your different nanosuit abilities to play in different ways. I've gone through like the first level and a half of the game without being spotted using the stealth suit.
Is there more variety in playing in replaying Crysis than BioShock, would you say?
Oh, yes.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
The levels are so much bigger. You can come at things so many different ways. And, you know, BioShock was inherently linear.
I don't want to give too much away from the review, but according to what Chuck was saying, even just among the difficulty levels, the changes are so... It's really a different kind of game.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, the one thing that I'll say is that, and I don't think this is giving away too much, but on Delta, what I thought was really cool is that in the first three difficulty settings, the North Koreans, well, they speak English. They yell at you in English and everything. But on Delta, which is the hardest setting, they actually speak Korean.
Yeah, how
so
awesome
you don't,
is that?
You don't actually know, like, in all the, when they're speaking English, you can say, oh, you know, where'd he go? We don't know where he is. So, you know, they don't actually know where you are. They can be calling for backup. They can do all these things. You know exactly what they're doing. When they're speaking Korean, unless you happen to be Korean or speak Korean, you have no idea what they're doing.
It's kind of an interesting way to approach difficulty, I guess.
Yeah, well, and that's not the only thing they do, but it's just an extra little, nice little add-on there that we've never seen before, which is, you know, a great idea, especially they've gotten to that level of effort to pull it off.
Yeah, that would have taken a lot of work.
The game that really threw this whole game length discussion into sharp relief recently, I guess, was Portal, which everyone has loved, but obviously because it was a fairly short game, has sparked a lot of discussion about how much value there is in there. Some people don't really like, for example, a lot of people are saying, is this game of the year? And I personally believe that it is. It's certainly a contender, but some people seem to think that because it's so short that it shouldn't really be considered valid for contention in the same way that, you know, a short film can't win the Best Picture Oscar or, you know, a short story or a novella.
I feel like the argument about bang for your buck has been had over and over and over again. I guess it really just depends on, you know, what gives you the overall best experience. Would you rather have a short game that's, you know, single-digit hours of just, like, awesomeness all the way through, or would you rather have, you know, a game that's longer, you get sort of more for the money you spent, but maybe it isn't great all the way through?
It's not just that, though. It's also appreciating the artist's contribution. You know,
yeah,
if you
the
had,
finer
if you,
points. Sure.
If you had a class and you had a student bring in a scribble and a student who brought in something he worked like 2 weeks on, you'd have to give credit to the guy who spent more time on it. So, I mean,
well, if it's any good, yes.
Right, obviously, but that is something that you do need to consider at least.
Well,
you
the argument's silly
this
in the first
sucks.
Place, though. I mean, the argument's silly because it's one of three brand new games in the package. I mean, you can buy it separately, but, you know, most people are going to go buy the orange box.
And also, the artist contribution argument I don't think holds up at all. Portal is a game that was in development for a very long time, certainly as long as plenty of other games that are out there, not because there was a huge amount of content to include in the game, but because they spent such a long time, and certainly you get the sense of this if you listen to the developer commentary in the game, finessing and perfecting every puzzle in the game. It's a very, deep experience in that there's very little, there's virtually no just running around from one gameplay section to the next. There's no filler. There's no padding. It's probably the leanest, most efficient game I've ever played in that there's virtually no point in the game where you're not challenged by something. And so I think the artist's contribution in that game is as great, if not greater, than the majority of really good games that were released this year. And I agree with Kristen that, I think there is a misconception to think that a game, somebody says, oh, a game is 20 hours long. That equates to 20 hours of value. There are plenty of games out there that are longer than Portal, but don't have as much good stuff in it. There's more good stuff in Portal than most games that are three times the length.
A 20-hour game and 10 hours of it is boring is not going to be as good as a really good 6-hour game.
Even if it's not that bad, even if it's not 10 hours of boring and 10 hours of great, even if it's just that the peaks and valleys of... And even if the valleys aren't, oh, this is awful, even if it's just, peaks and valleys of, oh, my God, I'm completely engaged versus, I'm not so engaged right now. I would much rather have a 3-hour game where the whole way through I'm really into it and I'm engaged.
And it's
now, here's a question about
Portal. If you compare it to film, for example, no one ever complains about a film being too short, really. But the much more common criticism, did this film really need to be 2¾ hours long? We saw a lot of those movies over the summer, films that really kind of exhausted the audience because they were very bloated and not the story wasn't told very efficiently or not edited very well, and the film ran way too long. And that can be very exhausting. But you never see that same problem or that same criticism in games, really. I've certainly played plenty of games where, I just wanted it to end already, and I kind of felt like I was going to getting a bit exhausted towards the end of the game. But no one ever seems to level that criticism in games. The whole idea of less is more is something that seems almost alien to game players, and I think we've actually seen that in Portal, where people have seen a short game and just instantly seen it as a negative, whereas maybe it was just the it was just the right length of game for the type of game that it was.
Now, about the length of Portal, though, they have all the challenge levels. I haven't actually gotten to those yet because I've had a bunch of other things to do, but I hear they're much, much harder than the average levels in the single player, or the standard story game. And that they take a lot longer. So,
I mean,
you have to be interested
in doing those kind of challenges. Like, I, for example, don't have a lot of interest in seeing if I can solve a particular puzzle in less than 30 seconds or do it by only using two portals or whatever. Those kind of challenges don't interest me. But I know for a lot
with
of people,
your hands
they do.
Behind your back, right?
Yeah, and there's additional value there. But Jeremy and I have commented on this before. That even just the single player game actually has replay value. You can leave the game for a week and come back, and you've basically forgotten how to do most of the puzzles, and they're kind of new again. It's weird, but it actually works.
Partly because the first time you do it, and I can say this only because I finally got myself some time on playing the game. I went through the first 10 levels in, I don't know, an hour or so, two nights ago, or Monday night, and then did 3 more levels last night. And there have been a couple levels that I will honestly say I sort of solved them by accident.
I think also
I just happened to shoot the portal in the right place.
I think also the clever thing about it, why I actually don't think it's even really that short, or why the length issue is not that much of a problem, is the game did do a very good job, and to be honest, Norm kind of helped along with this in making me feel like the game was going to be shorter than it was, because I got to the point, I had played through when it first came out to like level 17 or 18, and I was thinking, wow, is this really all there is? It's 19 levels. If that's, all these criticisms about the game being too short, I think I'm going to have to get on board with that, because, I mean, this has been great, but wow, it's over quickly. And Norm just kept saying, just keep playing. And then, of course, you get to the 19th level, and the game keeps going, and there's a chunk more to do, and it kind of, turns the expectation on its head. So even though it was a short game, I think it quite cleverly plays with that misconception by making you think that it's actually going to be shorter than it really is.
Yeah, I ended up doing, I was telling these guys yesterday that, you know, I was trying to decide, I blew through the first half so quickly that I was like, oh, if this is, you know, it's so fun if it's all going to go this quickly instead of sitting down and blowing through the second half, maybe I'll just do a couple of night. And Norm said the same thing. He was like, you're not going to have to worry about that when you get to a certain level. Yeah.
Yeah, it was very, very well done. So, it seems like we still can't get through a podcast without having a big orange box detour.
There was one question that I had that we couldn't answer a couple weeks ago because Kristen and Chuck weren't on, and that's, how are you guys going to handle Orange Box when it comes to Game of the Year? Are you just singling out the entire package, or are you opening it up to giving awards to single games?
You know, we haven't talked about that yet, actually.
No, we haven't. We haven't had our big Game of the Year awards discussion yet, so
I think Orange Box is going to be a headache for a lot of people that have to decide that this year.
I mean, my inclination is to say it depends on the category.
Well, let's just say overall Game of the Year.
Yeah, I mean, you know, when we've been sort of discussing it casually here
and
there.
We've been discussing it with Sean Connery.
With Sean Connery. We have not referred to it as Orange Box.
The Orange Box.
We've had the discussions on the individual games.
Okay. But your review was one single score. Is that right?
It was indeed, yes. Okay. So that's a good question and one that we don't have an answer to yet. Thanks, Jeremy.
And Gary said, you're not alone. I'm sure every publication is going to be struggling with this.
If I had to guess, I think we would probably evaluate the games separately.
Yeah.
But then, you know, for a category, say, like best value, it would be the entire package.
Right.
We can do whatever we want, because it's...
Yeah, and they are sold individually, too, so...
Yes.
They are, that's right.
Speaking of Game of the Year contenders, I guess everyone's been playing Crysis recently at PC Gamer, and it seems like a lot of other people are going to get the chance to get a taste of it, too. The demo's coming out, at midnight tonight?
I'm not exactly sure when the release date is, but it's coming out tomorrow at some point.
I've been told 2 a.m. tonight. I don't know which time zone.
Okay.
2 a.m.
Well, if it's 2 a.m. for you, then that's midnight for us, right?
Yeah, it's midnight for us.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you know, probably EA time zone, which is in Redwood Shores, California. So if they are doing the midnight thing, then it would be midnight tonight. Yes.
Now, how much can we even talk about Crysis on this podcast without giving away what you guys have got lined up for the review?
Well, we've already been talking about it, so without giving away our scoring, we can.
Well, let me ask you this. I'll just ask you a selfish question because, you know, I want the answer to this question myself.
Yeah.
How successfully has it been running on your different systems? Because, you know, I built this new PC. I'm hoping that it's going to be crisis proof, but I've already heard from Will Smith and others that they've had some headaches getting it running stable, getting it running at the high levels that the game is, you know, it really shines at.
I don't think there's any such thing as a crisis proof machine.
Yeah, I think, like we discussed with Norm last week, there is really no consumer machine right now where you can just max the game out because it is just, I mean, they future-proofed the game so that as you progress a little bit, you know, down the line, as the next generation of hardware comes out, then you'll start to see people running it.
But what's the point of that, though? What's the point of releasing a game that I'm only going to get the best
too,
out
Gary.
Of a year from now?
But the thing is that... You know, I can't name a single game that if you go onto their forums that you won't find someone who has problems running it. I mean, it's just
any
a common PC game.
I mean, do they seriously expect me though to play it, you know, to the best that I can right now, which is not what the game is fully capable of delivering on the best hardware that's not available now, put it on a shelf, having played it through and presumably completed it, and then come back in 6 months or a year and go, oh, now finally I can play this game the way it was meant to be played.
What is wrong with
okay.
that? I don't understand the problem, because what if Quake 3 had like a real-time ray tracing engine in it? And, it, you know, you could turn it on, but you could only play it like 3 frames a second. But you'd still have played the game, and it would look great in OpenGL, and then maybe 10 years from now you could go back and check out the ray tracing engine.
Because it seems more logical to me to optimize a game to be as good as it possibly can be on the best technology that's available today.
And it does.
To so release a game that only performs best.
Like, you're, the money that you're, in my opinion anyway, the money that you're spending on this game right now is basically means that, yeah, that later on you're actually going to get more from this game than you can get from it right now. I think that's a pretty good deal.
If it does push your system to its limits at the medium settings, what's wrong with that? Call it the high settings if you want to.
Yeah, and you can rename it if you want. It doesn't make any difference. I mean, would you be happier if they just didn't offer
because I guess in multiplayer, you know, there's always going to be the opportunity to come back and the game will have a much longer lifespan. But in the single player campaign, you know, I basically will have blown my wad. I won't really have much incentive to go back and play the game over with better graphical settings if I've already had that experience essentially.
Well, like we just said earlier, that, you know, there is incentive to go back and replay.
Yeah, I think you might want to go back and replay it. Also, yeah. we tested it out on the minimum spec, and it runs surprisingly well.
And it looks like better than Far Cry did at minimum spec. Is that right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think so.
Plus, they are licensing the engine, and so we're hoping to see lots of other games use this onto the next generation, which would be great.
What actually are the minimum specs for Crysis?
Do we have that lying around somewhere?
I might have it. Hang on one second.
Yeah, it's in the review, but
they put out the press release about it not too long ago.
Yeah. To answer your question though, guys, on my machine it runs fine. I have most of the settings set to medium, and it looks better than anything else out there at medium. So, you know, again,
that's fair enough. I mean, I remember seeing it a while ago at the Games for Windows event and was blown away by it. I mean, it really does look, you know, not just marginally better, but way better than any 3D game I've ever seen on a PC or really on any system.
Right, and I guarantee you they were not running at max settings there because they couldn't.
So I have the min spec if you want it. Yeah. 2.8 gig or faster processor if you're using XP, 3.2 gig or faster in Vista, a gig of RAM in XP, 1.5 gigs of RAM in Vista, 12 gig hard drive, 8-speed DVD, 256 meg video card, DirectX 9
Shader Model 2, I believe.
That sounds right. It doesn't say that. Yeah. But
I know Logan's not on the podcast, so maybe we can't really get into in depth here, but I've been reading a lot the last few days about this new 8800 GT that seems like it's going to lower the bar, at least cost-wise, for some higher-end graphics for games like this.
Yeah, that's right. They're just announcing that today. So we can talk about it a little bit, but we don't know all the specifics because Logan's not back yet from hearing the announcement. So, but yeah, it is allegedly supposed to have a price drop.
I'm looking forward to it.
If you've been holding off, yeah.
The other thing that I got just in the mail yesterday was Gears of War for Windows. I don't know if I'm even interested in putting that in my drive here. I already played it on Xbox.
Too little, too late.
Yeah, kinda. It feels the same way.
I just got it too. I haven't gotten a chance to play it. I'll play it. You know, it's got the exclusive PC content.
If you never played it before, it really is a good game. It's just, you know, I already felt like I did it on Xbox.
Right. Well, it's got the exclusive content though.
Yeah, but are you really, you know, it's like, I really want to watch through a whole movie again for like 2 minutes of additional scenes? You know, I'd rather just probably just watch
depends
the
on
scenes
the movie.
On their own.
Yeah,
depends
yeah,
on
I
who's
suppose.
Naked.
I remember
watching the director's cut of The 40-Year-Old Virgin and thinking, wow, I can kind of see why they cut this stuff out. Like, it just kind of flabbed the movie out. It wasn't the funniest stuff in the movie, and it just kind of slowed the pace of the film. Made me appreciate film editing on a whole other level. Like, wow, the original version's kind of better than this.
Yeah. But if you've already Gears of War is out, I guess there's no reason to. But like I never played it on the 360, so I'll
play
be
it.
All over that. Yeah, I'll play it. Yeah, when I get a few minutes.
Let's talk about one of our favorite subjects here on the podcast: in-game advertising. NCSoft. There's a couple of stories here that have brought this back into the news this week. NCSoft has signed a deal with an in-game advertising firm
MMO.
Its free MMO. They're not expecting you to pay money to play a game and then go in and see advertising. Although NCSoft is kind of straddling a weird world there, aren't they, in the MMO pricing models, because Guild Wars is a game that you pay initially but then is uniquely free after you've bought the game. So it probably won't be too long before they start making that argument and saying, well, we're going to put ads in Guild Wars.
Possibly, but I think ads would be so jarring in Guild Wars because it's so out of context that I don't think they'll do that.
Well, this is the thing Kotaku here, which sourced the story, is making the exact same point that I was just going through my head when I read it. And if, you know, how do you, like, if Pepsi wants to advertise in your fantasy MMO, how on earth do you make that work?
Well, because I think one of the games in question is Dungeon Runners, right?
Right.
Yeah, Dungeon Runners.
But it's also free.
So, no, it's free, but it's
but
also
doesn't, but
it's
that doesn't make a
game.
Pepsi billboard any less inappropriate.
It does, because when I'm not paying anything for a game, the gloves come off. That's okay. I'm willing to make concessions for a free game. If I'm paying something for it, and you've got these ads in there that make no sense for where they are, that doesn't make any sense. I mean,
I guess it depends on the implementation. If they were to have like a Pepsi interstitial or something in between loading
right.
screens or however, right. but you know, you're not going to want to see billboards, you know, for like ye olde Pepsi.
That's the thing. I really don't get about in-game advertising. They have these loading screens, you know, that you have to, and there's no way around it. You've got to sit there because it's a necessity of the game to display that screen. And usually it's some piece of art or something. But if you're going to do in-game advertising, put it there. Don't put it in the game where it's gonna take me out of the immersion, and it doesn't make any sense that they haven't been doing that.
There are plenty of games, of course, where it is entirely inappropriate. Certainly the sports genre has really been a big leader for this, because, you know,
absolutely.
Just in the world of sports is already completely infested by advertising. So
it looks weird not having it.
Yeah, exactly. By incorporating it into the game, you actually just add to the verisimilitude of the game itself. I mean, there are other cases, though, where it kind of feels like it's on the edge of being appropriate, but the implementation wasn't quite right. I remember running around the casinos in Rainbow Six Vegas, and because the game knew where I was, and I was in a Comcast market that was, you know, was served by Comcast cable, I saw a lot of ads for Comcast. But not just a lot of ads. Every single billboard that had been opened up for, you know, this is where in-game advertising goes here. It was the same ad. It was the exact same ad. And, I mean, that's not realistic. You wouldn't see the same ad repeated, you know, plastered all over.
And a lot of Axe body spray.
Right, exactly. You would you would see a variety of different ads. And if you can make it feel real, then it'll perform the same function that advertising does in the real world. You know, you don't feel like it's, you know, penetrating your life, but it is having some kind of effect on you, presumably, because advertising
right.
does, you know, does work. But when you do it in this kind of clumsy way, it makes it way too opaque and very annoying.
Yeah, the problem there is that there, and this is going to sound bad, there isn't enough on in-game advertising. If more companies did it, there would be more variety in those ads, and you wouldn't be seeing the same thing over and over again. And, you know, obviously that's something not a lot of people want anyway, but if you're going to have in-game advertising, and a lot of people seem to have decided that we are, it would be nice if it was, you know, as not annoying as it can be. I guess the other major game to have in-game advertising now is Hellgate London. They put it in the subway tunnels. They've got, they've got ads up in the subway stations where you do all your interaction, all your, you know, loot buying and stuff like that, and selling off your loot and buying stuff and upgrading stuff and getting your missions. And it actually kind of makes sense there, because when was the last time you'd been in a subway station that wasn't plastered with ads?
Certainly, if you go to if you spend a lot of time in the London Underground, as I have over the years, you know, yeah, there are adverts plastered absolutely everywhere. And it's kind of an interesting implementation, because in the context of the game here, these are ads from kind of a destroyed world. You know, you're not being asked to go out and buy these ads, to endorse these products within the game, because, you know, you may see an ad for Coca-Cola, for example, in Hellgate London, but in the world of Hellgate London, presumably the Coca-Cola Corporation has been destroyed, or, you know,
right.
at least taken over by demons, in which case, you know, who would even notice? But you know,
it's not like there should be some futuristic ad up there, because in the post-apocalyptic future, there are no companies buying ads and taking down the old ones.
What about the
new Coca-Cola with sulfur?
What about the principle,
about
though? I mean, don't you guys have a problem with seeing in-game ads in a game that is subscription-based?
Well, it's not necessarily subscription-based.
It's not?
I mean, you can play the MMO part of it without subscribing. You just don't get all of the benefits. You don't get, like, the new stuff. You get a limited number of character slots and things like that. I guess the issue is if you do subscribe, you still get the ads, which
it's kind of annoying.
But again, like with the sports games, it would look kind of odd to have a subway station without ads.
Yeah, exactly. So, I sometimes in certain cases, I think the principle of the argument is not quite enough. I understand why people say, well, if I'm already paying for this game, I should reserve the right to not have to look at advertising. But it's not like looking at advertising is some kind of torture that you're being subjected to. It can be in some games when it's just not appropriate. But if you've got a game that for creative and non-business related reasons happens to be set in a subway station and in a real life subway station is classed with ads, you're going to have ads on the walls just to make it look like a real subway station to begin with. Why not make them real ads and earn a few extra bucks on the side?
Yeah, and they just have to fake the ads otherwise and have, you know,
sold for cola. And then it would actually kind of look lame and take away from the world.
If they're done well, they can be funny. I mean, Fallout, the first two games had some pretty funny, fake ads for, like, Nuka-Cola and things like that. But yeah, I mean, if you're creating a new universe and, you have an opportunity to supplement the game that way and, have some more income and make the game more successful and put more money into the development and make it more fun, then there's not a huge issue with that until the ads become obtrusive and obnoxious.
There have been some cases, though, that even in the world of sports, a company, well, not surprisingly, EA, have rubbed gamers up the wrong way. And I think in the latest iteration of Fight Night, I don't know if it's even called Fight Night anymore, but, the boxing game that EA has.
Is it called Coca-Cola Presents Fight Night?
Well, no, it was they had made a very big deal with Burger King. And so, and it had penetrated into the game in a way that was beyond what you would see on TV. We all know that when you watch boxing, you see ads everywhere. But it was.
Do you have to fight the guy with the big head?
You'd actually could fight the king in the game as kind of a bonus thing. it was the commentators where everything was like, that knockout brought to you by new chicken fingers from Burger King. And it was just so obnoxious and so much more than would be tolerated in TV advertising, that a lot of gamers found that they had gone too far, and again it pushed through that sense of realism and actually took them out of the game.
Right.
Well, I think for a lot of people, they don't mind the advertising as long as they get some sort of a price break on the cost of the game, and in the case of Hellgate London, it's still going to be a $50 game. So there is no price break. And I'd actually asked somebody who works for one of the companies that sets up the advertising, well, why can't publishers set up some sort of price break? And they said that the offset for the advertising is not nearly as much as you would think, that it would probably only knock off like maybe a dollar or two off the final price of the product.
And even if it did fully offset the cost shock, companies just aren't in the... You can't reasonably expect a company like EA or Activision to make the decision to pass that cost savings onto the consumer. They're going to make as much money as they possibly can. If they believe that they can still sell Hellgate at $50 and throw in a bunch of advertising, they're going to do both.
Right, but if you like, I guess my question, having heard that, is okay. So if it's only going to make them a dollar to show me these ads, can I pay an extra dollar and not see the ads? That would be a nice option.
No, because then that would cost even more for them to implement that solution.
Overhead for that is, yeah.
Can I pay $2 to not see the ads?
Just want it all.
The other thing that's rubbing a few people the wrong way, it seems, this week is the news of Hellgate scanning your machine. This is something that we've traditionally associated with companies like Microsoft in the past. It's probably not that big a surprise that EA is up to it now, but there is this story here that as part of the Hellgate EULA, the software will poke around inside your hard drive and see what else you're up to other than playing Hellgate. And there seems to be here that the focus, according to Flagship, is that they want to make sure you're not cheating. Dan, as vehemently anti-cheat as you are, surely you would approve of this.
Well, especially in a multiplayer game. And, I don't like the idea that somebody's seeing exactly what I'm running, but it's not unprecedented. WoW does this. Millions of people are fine with it. And Blizzard hasn't abused this information anyway. Granted, Blizzard is not EA, but I don't see really what relevance that has. All they're looking for, and I guess Max Schaefer, the COO of Flagship, went on the Voodoo Extreme message boards and you know, talked to some people about that, about the situation. You know, that they're not keeping any personal information about it. They're not trying to do anything nefarious here. They just want to make sure that you're not running any cheating programs in the background. That's all they want to know.
I think the only people that are going to be really pissed off by this are, you know, the usual kind of privacy freaks and the tinfoil hat brigade, who believe that the only reason EA would want to do this is to find out what you're doing, you know, on your computer and pass it on to the FBI or whatever, or use it to bombard you with personalized junk mail for the rest of your life. That, of course, is not really what's going on here. If the real motivation here, which I entirely believe, is to make sure that you're not running any kind of malicious programs intended to help you cheat or break the game in any way, then I fully support that.
Yeah, that's you know, Max Schaefer made perfectly clear that's all they were trying to do with this. I guess the issue they continue to have is that the language in the EULA may open the door for them to do more than that. I don't think that anybody in their right mind would do that, because if that was the case where they did abuse this, the backlash would be so huge that nobody would ever buy anything from them again. So until that was removed, at least. So I don't think they're that stupid.
Let's do some playlists. Dan, what have you been playing? The amazing thing about playlists these days is that due to the magic of the Steam community, I already kind of know some of the answers because I can see exactly what you're playing when you're playing.
You know some of it. I finally finished Half-Life 2 Episode 2. I was you know, just at the leading up to the last battle when I got Crisis, and that kind of sidetracked me. But then I went and played the last battle, and that was a very satisfying ending for that game. What else did I do? I've been playing Universe at War, Earth Assault for Review. I have been playing Crisis, of course. I've been playing that's about it for the last few days, anyway.
What you haven't been playing enough of, Dan, is Team Fortress. I frankly take it as a personal slight.
Hear, hear.
When you've got me, Jeremy, Will, Norm, all on Team Fortress, having a great time together as buddies, as pals online, sending you Steam messages going, hey, come join us. And you go, no, I don't want to. And you're like, clearly,
I didn't say I don't want to. I said,
all on your own.
I didn't say I don't want to. I said I can't because I have to finish Universe at War. Because I've got Empire Earth 3 coming in. I've got a review after this. So there's a stack of games that's growing on my desk. I just don't have time to devote to Team Fortress.
I bet you have time for your
like
girlfriend, though, don't you?
If I didn't, I would be in a lot of trouble.
And how could that time be better spent? That's what you got to ask yourself.
Yes, I would like to go on having a girlfriend, if that's all right with you.
Kristen, what have you been playing?
Portal. Or as Logan say, Portal, 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 Portal. Portal, 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 Portal.
Did you finish?
I didn't have a chance to finish. No, I think I was saying before that I played through half of it on Monday night, and then last night I played just like another three levels for a little while, mostly because, as I was telling DJ, my sort of like pukiness started to hit in. At one point, I accidentally like misfired a portal and got stuck briefly in that loop where you're like flipping in and out. You know, you're like,
yeah,
you're stuck in the loop. And I was like, oh God, I got to put my head down for a second.
Are you someone that gets nauseous normally?
It takes me like twice as long to get through any shooter as anybody else because I have to play them all in like 20-minute increments. I generally like force my way through them because I particularly love first-person shooters, but I do get nauseated when I'm playing first-person games. So this actually, it just started to happen, you know, when I hit level like 14. Like I made it all the way up to there, it was actually fine, and then all of a sudden it sort of started to get to me. That could have just been fatigue. I was playing kind of late last night, so I might finish it tonight. I'm not sure. I might wait till the weekend. And then the other thing I'm playing is this game that I happened upon today called Dangerous High School Girls in Trouble.
Sounds like a winner to me.
So I'll get back to you more on what that's all about.
Yeah, that's
well, hold on,
the
you can't just put that out there. What is this game?
Well, I just started playing it. So
well,
far,
what is
it appears to be set in some sort of fictional 1920s American town. And so far, I am playing as Emma, and I am trying to build up my team of other girls, and together we are going to scare some of the other girls in the town. Right now we are trying to find the stooly girl that was harassing my friend Hazel. So.
What kind of game is it?
It's a point and click. I don't even know what you would call this.
Not adventure?
No, it's not an adventure. It's sort of an adventure game. Ooh, I found her. I found the stooly girl. This semester, I'll be top girl because of what I overheard. She'll be all wet. She insults Emma. I'm going to taunt her.
Sounds fantastic.
Wow.
Where has this game been all my life?
Do you realize how many stereotypes you're feeding right now, Kristen?
You're so clumsy, you could cut yourself on a rubber band. And so my response is going to be...
Oh, no, you didn't.
Sweet top man.
Girlfriend.
Did he shoot it or am I speaking to it? That's my retort.
Is this Japanese?
It's not.
I'm surprised.
You remind me of a dog my uncle had. He shot it.
Oh, whoa.
Right.
Are you playing high school girls are dangerous?
Is this for review?
No, it's not for review. Oh. I just stumbled upon it and thought it looked kind of funny, so.
So you're choosing to play this in your free time?
If by my free time you mean while I'm doing the podcast, then yes.
Not very taxing, then.
No.
Chuck, what about you?
Well, I just finished Portal myself, and I'm about to start playing The Witcher. Unfortunately, the game's not even out yet, and there's already a patch that's for the game, so I'm going to have to download that before I can actually start playing The Witcher. I did get in today a new game that I'm not sure if I want to play or if maybe this should also be Kristen's next game.
Don't even say it.
It's Dream Day Honeymoon. It's an actual game. Dream Day
Honeymoon.
Where
you go on your honeymoon?
It says it's a seek and find puzzle. It's the romantic adventure continues in this thrilling seek and find game. And you discover, you look for souvenirs while you're on honeymoon. That's the entire game.
Games?
Yeah, who is responsible for this, Chuck?
This is from Oberon Games. So big plug to Oberon, I guess.
If anyone's looking for a romantic honeymoon game,
it exists. It's out there.
Yeah. Jeremy, I kind of know at least some of what you've been playing.
Yeah, well, you know, Team Fortress 2 ad nauseum every night. But while I was away on break, I couldn't play anything recent because my dad doesn't have a machine really that you would call a gaming machine. So I actually loaded up Norbacular Drop, having finished Portal and loved it. Norbacular Drop is the precursor to that, the student project that in turn got hired by Valve. And it's really, really cool. I mean, it's...
How similar are they?
Very similar, except you can't see through the portals more than just one. So it doesn't look... And graphically, it's very, very low budget. But the principle is the same, the mechanic is the same, and in some ways, it's actually a little harder because there's no curve at all. It pretty much drops you in at a very high level of... complexity. So it's worth checking out. If you finish Portal, just Google Norbacular Drop. It's a quick, easy download, and it'll give you your fix. I also checked out the new Tony Hawk on Xbox, which is a real disappointment, and that's pretty much it.
That Tony Hawk franchise, I think they've taken that pretty much into the ground now.
One game I want to check out is Jericho. Do you guys recommend that?
Chuck, do you recommend that?
Well, I actually have reviewed it, and all I'll say is no, I don't personally recommend it.
Okay.
It's no Unforgiven.
Is it an Undying?
No, actually that's what I meant. It's no Undying.
Okay.
Yeah.
The big thing that I'm surprised we haven't talked about on the podcast in the last couple of weeks is Guitar Hero is finally coming to the PC next week.
Yeah. Indeed it is.
Rock on.
Officially. Guitar Hero 3 Legends of Rock.
Yep.
This will be the first one that will be on all formats, including PC. It looks like they've bundled the Xbox 360 guitar from Guitar Hero 2 in with the package. It even has the little Xbox guide button built into the guitar. I guess it will work just like any other Xbox controller that you plug into your PC. But for PC owners that have been wanting to get a bit of Guitar Hero action and have been stuck with... shitty frets on fire and games like that. We'll now finally get a taste of the real thing, I guess. I wonder how good the port is. I hope they did a good job. You guys, did you
it's
guys
great.
Get it?
I played it.
Yeah?
Yeah,
did you do a good job?
Yeah. Yeah, I was pretty happy. I mean, it looks just.
I heard like the PS2 version was a bit sucky because it was farmed out to another developer, and I was hoping it wasn't going to be the same problem.
The game has, I mean, now granted, I played a beta build. What, I don't know, a couple months ago now, and so there were some like the build I was playing was a little bit laggy. But it also, even without that, you can tell, like, they've sort of changed some of the difficulties a little bit different, so that the hammer-ons and hammer-offs are a little bit more forgiving, but the finger work is more difficult, if that makes any sense. So instead of automatically getting that, like, noise that you get if you miss a hammer-on, you get sort of like a different sort of a twang. Like, the idea was to make it more like playing the guitar. So, it's a little different, but.
And this is the first one that comes with multiplayer online, right?
Yeah. Although it's not cross-platform.
That's right.
So it's just PC to PC for you.
Right.
Okay. I think you can also play with Mac people, though.
Okay.
You can, that's right.
Well, for my part, I've obviously been playing a bunch of Team Fortress 2, continuing to enjoy that. I did finally finish Half-Life Episode 2. I think I already talked about that last week. I finished that a while ago. I've got Gears of War sitting here, but I don't know if I'm going to get to that. I've got a bunch of games sitting here, but they're all just withering in the shadow of Team Fortress 2. If I've got some spare time at the end of the day to play a game, it ain't going to be anything else than Team Fortress 2 at this point. It's just a shame for everything else right now that's vying for my attention.
Oh, that'll change when Crysis gets there. I promise you.
Yeah, well, we'll see.
I promise you.
I know I've been a bit of a Crysis skeptic. I'm one of those people that didn't like Far Cry, and I know that's not a very popular view. And I guess I've just heard about... I think what's happened with Crysis is they've kind of mismarketed it a little bit. Or maybe it's not them, but maybe it's just the way that the press has chosen to present it. It's been so much about the graphics that I haven't really... You know, I'm kind of like, well, okay, but is there a good game there as well? And it seems like there is, but it's just not the way the game's been presented to me. It's been about, oh, look at all these wonderful visual effects. And usually when you hear that kind of stuff, it's because they're trying to hide the fact there isn't much of a game there. But
stand by, my friend.
That isn't the case.
Yeah. I'm willing to get the demo tomorrow. Get the demo tomorrow. You'll be impressed.
Have you played the demo?
No, but we've played the game.
I'm just wondering how long the demo is, because the Call of Duty one was very short.
Yeah, it was, especially for how big the download was.
Right.
But I'm expecting the Crysis demo to be in the neighborhood of 1.6 to 2 gigs. So it'll be a hefty download, but it'll be worth it. And if it's anything like the Far Cry demo, do you remember the Far Cry demo that came out? I guess we had it exclusively on the disc for a little while. And I spent like just hours and hours replaying that demo because it was so open. Hmm. And there were just so many different ways to go about, you know, getting from point A to point B that the demo had so much replayability. I think Crysis one will be very similar.
All right, that'll about do it for this week's PC Gamer podcast. Apologies for the length. If games are getting shorter, we are certainly making up for it by making our podcast longer every week. But hopefully we kept you entertained, and hope you enjoyed everything. And if you liked the magazine, then buy it, and that's it.
There's actually something I want to. Next week on the PC Gamer podcast, we're going to be joined by Kevin Unengst, who's Microsoft's General Manager of Games for Windows. He's going to be answering your questions about PC gaming, Windows Vista, and the Games for Windows initiative. So do please call in with your questions, 877-404-1337, extension 724. Give us your burning questions and head scratchers, and Kevin is going to answer them live next week on your favorite show, on your favorite subject, from the people you like the most. That's us. And remember, please, to keep your questions to 1 minute.
Also, this just in from Norm. He wishes to withdraw his statements last week about the time shift demo, and he apologizes for any mistakes.
Actually, I'm not sure about the SDK. I know the map editor is.
I don't care about the SDK.
Oh, that's not
okay, right. Lara Croft is right now being wheeled by our...
That's
I just saw that.
That was
that's
a little creepy.
Bizarre.
I thought it was techno music.
Before that, it was what's his name?
Salt Snake.
Did you know that tonight's episode of The Office is about Dwight getting sucked into Second Life?
Oh, awesome. I'll have to watch that.
I'm sorry, it's down to 30 minutes now.
There was a story online a couple of weeks ago that made me think of you guys. It was scientists invent way to play Second Life using thought control, and I thought, oh my God, that's like the ultimate PC gamer podcast story. But they made that story just for us.
Nice.
I'm your host, former editor-in-chief and Backspace columnist Gary Witter.
Did you sound any less excited?
You know what? At this point, no. I could not sound any less excited.
Welcome to the Amazing Gamer Podcast.
Mm-hmm.
I'm your
host. All right,
sure.
Awesome.
Yes, hello, welcome one and all. Roll up for another super sore away PC Gamer podcast. I'm your host, former editor-in-chief. What? If you want me to do it, don't interrupt.
Sorry, I thought you were done.
Are we ready now?
Ready.
Yes. Hugh, Gary.
Jeremy, where do you want me to take it from? You want me to just do it all over again?
I thought we were rolling with that. I thought it was going to be fun, but yeah, I guess we should start over.